This is BDO in the Boardroom, a podcast by the BDO Center for Corporate Governance for the Board of Directors and those charged with governance. We're joined by your board peers and inspiring leaders to discuss the trending and timeless issues that are impacting today's boardroom agendas. Let's get started.
I'm Amy Rojic, Director of BDO Center for Corporate Governance, and I'm very happy to have the chance to sit down with my fellow BDO colleague, Lee Klump, who's an Assurance National Technical Principal in BDO's nonprofit and government industry practices. Today, we'll be discussing the concept of adaptive governance and how it is essential for organizations to remain resilient and effective, calling on leaders and boards to proactively evolve their governance practices to meet the demands, seize opportunities, and achieve long-term sustainability in a rapidly evolving environment. So while Lee is our resident nonprofit technical leader, our discussion today will focus on how both nonprofit and for-profit boards can adapt governance models to allow more agility and flexibility. But first, a little about my guest. Lee is a nationally recognized leader in nonprofit and governmental accounting, audit methodology, and financial reporting. He has over 30 years of experience, and he has built a distinguished career guiding professional practice groups, shaping audit and accounting policies, and advising organizations on complex issues. His deep knowledge extends to GAAP, GAS, and GASB, as well as regulatory compliance with a specialization in not-profit financial reporting, single audits, and governance best practices. He's a nationally recognized speaker, author, and educator, as well as regularly welcomed presentations on a variety of conferences and a featured author of numerous articles and blogs. And his book, How to Read Nonprofit Financial Statements, A Practical Guide, is in its third edition and is widely used as a resource in the nonprofit sector, reinforcing his role as a thought leader in financial reporting and governance best practices. So Lee, welcome to BDO in the Boardroom. So we're here to discuss the concept and how organizations and boards can better understand and apply adaptive governance. So before we get into the details, Lee, perhaps you can give us a little background on what adaptive governance is and its origin.
Adaptive governance also goes by a lot of other names. I mean, conceptually, there's some overlap. You may hear names like dynamic governance, progressive governance, flexible governance. They all have a lot of similarities, but adaptive governance in itself is nothing more than an approach to organizational oversight that prioritizes flexibility and responsiveness and learning. Unlike traditional governance, which often rules on a rigid hierarchy or static policies, adaptive governance is designed to help organizations evolve in response to changing internal and external conditions. And if you think about the world today, I mean, all you got to do is just blink your eyes and something's changed, whether it's regulatory or something within your organization. We're constantly responding to change. So the concept of adaptive governance, actually, if you go out and research, you'll find that the field actually evolved through an environmental management concept back in the 70s and the 80s, particularly with the work of an ecologist named C.S. Holding. But there were others as well that were kind of evolved some of his thoughts. The key to it is he challenged the concepts that we normally have in our governance structure, which is, you know, we try to be predictive and advocate instead of policies that adapt based on real world feedback. So if you're in a corporate America and, you know, all of a sudden your product is slowing down on sales, well, there's some kind of feedback to that. Why is that? What's changing? Is it the competition? Is it the quality? Is it market placement? There's a lot of things that go there. So over the last 2.5 decades, scholars as well as practitioners have expanded adaptive governance past the environmental concept. It's applied in all kinds of topic areas. A lot of it's around the natural resources type concept, but it's being applied in other places. I actually recently just found an article trying to adapt it to law and how legal aspects of this come into play. But we've seen adaptive governance being applied not only in public institutions and nonprofits, but we're also seeing it applied in for-profit entities as well. So the core idea here is to create a governance structure for an entity not only complements, but also is strategic, resilient, inclusive, and adaptable. so that you can respond to whatever's happening in the marketplace and whatever the feedback is from your stakeholders.
Thank you. So I keyed into a recent article that you wrote that's posted on BDO.com that explores this concept as it pertains to nonprofits during periods of uncertainty. But maybe you could expand a little bit how it can be further incorporated into both nonprofits and for-profit and public companies and their governance structures. And I guess maybe highlight some of the main challenges that companies may face today that may make adaptive governance so critical.
If you think about adaptive governance, it's highly versatile, it's flexible, it's adaptable. So it can be tailored to fit almost any unique situation that you come across, any type of organization, nonprofit, for-profit, a technology company versus a manufacturing and distribution organization or a software company. And it doesn't matter whether that company is a public company or a private company. It's very flexible, but the key is to move away from that one size fits all. We're going to govern our organization the same way that, you know, Tesla does or IBM. You know, we're going to take these examples from others, and this is how we're going to do it. And it moves away from that, and it tries to adapt it to the organization's environment. In the case where, you know, you're looking at a nonprofit and got adaptive governance, they were trying to involve others, such as their donors and best beneficiaries of communities. Well, in a for-profit entity, you might want to think about involving employees or customers or suppliers, especially now with all the discussions about tariffs, investors in the governance process, and then using these real-time pieces of data that you collect and through feedback in order to drive strategic pivots. But as to your point, like what might be some of the obstacles or how's my leadership going to address this? How's this changed my decision-making authority? And there's things that you can do. I mean, obviously, you can develop cross-functional teams that help with collaboration and innovation. You can, obviously, in most organizations today, there's continuous learning. But trying to think about scenarios that are more futuristic and trying to address, if we had this situation, how would the board and how would management respond to that? What would we do with our budgets? What would we do with our communication protocol? And once we came up with something, that's the big key is this is regularly reviewing, updating governance policy. Because as you're adapting your organization to address the stressors, the challenges of today's world, you want to think about, well, how I adapted my policies, these new changes. So ultimately, when you look at adaptive governance, it helps organizations, regardless to the sector or the industry, it helps them stay aligned to their missions and their business objectives. So while I'm trying to remain agile to face certain uncertainties or out in the marketplace today.
Yeah, and I loved your comment about the scenario planning, because I think we're seeing a lot more of that. In fact, a lot of the conferences that I've already attended this season, there's been a significant uptick in, I'd say, talking points around the value of scenario planning. And I don't just mean the occasional tabletop exercises, but really scenario planning that takes management team kind of, you know, off their feet a little bit, as well as boards. And they have various components of the scenario in which they're really introducing complex themes and topics and having multiple things happening at once to really simulate real life. And I think we're about to get into that a little bit in the next question I have for you. So I guess, you know, when we're thinking about kind of looking at some of the areas that challenge boards today, maybe you can give a little bit of context around that. And how do we do that? How do we approach all of these kind of changes in the environment? And, you know, how does that maybe help strengthen the organization's resilience at the same time?
We've seen unprecedented volatility and complexity in the marketplace over the last 10 years. Okay. Organizations have had to respond to supply chain issues, employment issues, all of us working from home. And now we're dealing with tariff issues. And God knows what is next, because the one thing I will say is the future definitely will not be the same as it is today. But if you think about the main challenges, one is economic uncertainty. So how do we address that? You know, the fluctuation of the markets, inflation, employment, interest rates, global supply. All these can cause disruptions to our organizations that require not only us being nimble, but also having a rapid response and informed decision making. And then you get into like the political and regulatory changes that are going on in the world today, shifting regulations, changes in trade policy, compliance requirements. Those are requiring us to think and kind of figure out where we need to go. But we need to think about it kind of before it happens. We need to have a path, you know, a playbook so that we can adjust on the fly. Technology disruptions, pace of innovation today is crazy. When I started my career, we didn't have laptops. We had 13 column pads. It wasn't that long ago, guys. It was 30 years ago. Now, I mean, I can pretty much do everything on my phone. It's amazing. So, you know, but technology disruptions are something we think about. Okay, we are a company and we've invested in all these new tools and we've got all these great platforms and that we run our business models through. All of a sudden, the data center crashes. What do? You know, we've talked about having these kind of doomsday, you know, sessions in the past, you know, what happens if we have some kind of disruption? But we have to think about that going forward because so much of our businesses are in the cloud or in a tool and what happens there. But there's also stockholder expectations because not only do we have the investors, the stockholders, but we've also got our customers, our employees. Can't leave out the regulators. They're everywhere we turn. And then in some cases, we might be the largest employer in the community. So there's communities that are involved here. And everybody and their brother is demanding greater transparency, greater accountability, and more social responsibility in today's world. So then we come down to all the resource constraints that we have to deal with. Because I said all these things, if we could fix all of this, we'd be great. But let's face it, all these things cost money. And that's a resource that's not infinite. But, you know, we also face all these pressures. How do we take the active governance platform so that we can actually turn around and make efficient and effective governance decisions that are essential to our ongoing operations?
Yeah, I think one of the things you'd mentioned earlier, I think the very beginning of your discussion was the concept focuses heavily on resilience. So I guess, how do adaptive governance practices help strengthen the organization in that regard?
Well, as we talked a few minutes ago, scenario planning. The biggest problem is trying to address what you don't know. Even though the facts and circumstances should be a little bit different, but if boards and leaders are constantly exploring multiple possibilities about what could happen in the future, talking about it and preparing for a various range of outcomes, that will help them because they're going to be able to pull on those experiences instead of just dealing with, you know, or relying on a single forecast or events in the future. The other thing is, if we can develop a kind of a test and learn model, iterative decision making, also referred to in this approach, for making small adjustments based on feedback, we don't have to make big adjustments later. If we use the data we gather to try to make those adjustments rather than waiting for the perfect information, if we sit around and say, well, let's see if we can get this data tweaked just a little bit more. Well, what might end up happening is if we wait for that perfect amount of information to make the decision, we may miss an opportunity. We may be left at the docks watching a boat sail away. You know, a lot of people complain about Apple, which is a great company, well-managed, but they complain about, well, I buy a new iPhone and there's all these glitches and there's a patch that comes out. Well, they got it 99% right. And then they got feedback and they adjusted it and they keep adjusting it until, by the way, they come up with the next model, you know, a year or two later. But the idea is if you wait for everything to be perfect, you'll never get anything done.
Right. I think one of the things as you were talking about the scenario planning, I think maybe tied into that is truly doing a continual risk assessment. I mean, I'm putting my auditing hat on, but it's it's broadly applicable for, you know, companies, especially in today's environment, is not doing a risk assessment at the beginning of the year and then doing it again next year. It has to be a continual approach to that, combined with the thoughtful process. Okay, now we have this new information about risks and opportunities facing our business. What do we do with that? How can we make, like you said, the small or the interim decision so that we can move forward and not have to do a big pivot?
Absolutely. And to your point there, I can remember early in my career, I went into the CFO office of a telecom company that I was working on. And I asked them about risk assessment. I was trying to understand how risk assessment played in the internal controls. And the first thing he said, I don't have time or money to go hire some consultant to do a risk assessment. You know, the best risk assessments that I've ever seen done have been the CEO, CFO, and maybe the operations director going out for lunch and doing it on the back of a napkin in a restaurant, thinking about the what could go wrong. Then what would our response be? Risk assessment doesn't require a consultant. Risk assessment requires you to sit down and think about the what could go wrongs and what your response would be to those. And that can be very helpful, especially, you know, because it creates feedback. And then if you have that feedback, then you can go through your governance structure to think about how you might need to be adaptive to something. It's a great way to think about it.
Yeah, I think we've come a long way from the back of a napkin approach, but
we have spreadsheets and tools. Yeah. And
but to your point, you know, it's not just that one-time event that you do during the year. It's a continuous set of activities that go into that risk assessment and the information that comes out of that. And, you know, on either side of that is you want good data, good inputs to make your decision. So I think those are really some valuable things that folks take away. But maybe what are some of the practical steps, since we're speaking to a board audience, that they can take to begin embracing or continue embracing adaptive governance? And maybe have some examples that would highlight success in that area.
You just said one, we just talked about it, what is the risk assessment, understanding what our readiness status is, but also educating and aligning leadership. Okay. We may need to host workshops or training sessions to build an understanding of adaptive governance principles and to get different parts of the organization to feed information up to those charged with governance. That's a key. I mean, I don't know if we really have time for, you know, our board chair to go talk to the guys in receiving, but the procurement group could do that with, you know, a cross-functional task force, and that report comes back up and it goes through management and to the board. And we think about, well, you know, the big problem we have is all the trucks are now a different size than when we built this building 50 years ago. Somebody could get hurt. That's a problem. But the other piece of it is restructuring committees. And like I just suggested, it was a perfect example. Establishing learning cycles. Traditionally, the learning cycle is we plan, we do, we put it on the shelf, and we kind of forget about it. But the learning cycle really should be an adaptive governance, the plan, the do, the review, adapt again, continuous cycle. And you have to put that review and that process into it. This is all looped into not only board meetings and strategic planning meetings, but various other committees and task force that an organization can have. The other thing is engaging our stakeholders, okay? We have many different stakeholders in our networks. We could set up advisory groups and make sure those advisory groups or task force, whatever you want to call them, have a diverse perspective. If they all come from the same place, with the same agenda, with the same experiences, you're going to get one answer. What you want to do is get a broad range of answers to address, you know, various types of changing issues that may be coming up. And then the other thing is, when we do all of this, don't forget, we've got to update our policies. One of the key things in corporate governance is making sure that organizations have policies in order to carry out the strategic objectives of the board. You don't have to write the policies as a board member, but you need to make sure that management adopts them, not only writes them, but adopts them, and that requires oversight. So in the scheme of all of this, you might want to think about some examples. There was a nonprofit organization that created a board subcommittee to address policy changes affecting funding when they happen. This allowed them to adjust their programs real time. If all of a sudden we have a lot more funding, we can think about what that needs to do. If we have funding constraints, like a lot of nonprofits have had over the last 9 months, then we need to scale things back. We need to look for other funding sources. We need to do different things. But if you take that, you could also apply that to a consumer goods company. They use scenario planning to anticipate supply chain issues and disruptions, and that helped them to maintain operations during a global shipping crisis. I don't have to tell you what that is. I think everybody could think back 3 or 4 years ago, yeah. but it did happen. It was a company located here in Baltimore near where I live, and they were able to adjust. Not everybody was as flexible as they were, and that was a good thing. But think about what you know, in these scenarios, what adaptive governance does. It gives you the ability to be agile, resilient. In order to do all of that, you have to develop a process, a platform, and it's based on one thing. Everybody moving in the same direction, thinking about all these things, and everything's based on trust. That is the whole thing. Whether it's the management team, the employees, your suppliers and vendors, you know, we're all working towards the same thing. And when you have that concept of trust, you can move mountains.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think it's easier said than done, but I think there's definitely specific things that you can do to forge that trust and maintain that trust. I think one of the examples that comes immediately to mind is, you know, companies who adapted very quickly to, you know, where we found ourselves in COVID by sending their people home, setting them up in home offices, allowing them to communicate via Skype and Zoom and other applications. But now you see the drive to get workers back in the offices. And some companies are really wrestling with that because, you know, they established this precedent for people to work at home. And now that's becoming a roadblock for a lot of companies that, you know, may be seeing breakdown in corporate culture or underdevelopment of folks that aren't surrounded, you know, or aren't working closely enough with the supervisors that are supposed to train and develop them. So I think that's one area that I see companies needing, specifically to your point, the trust aspect of that. It's being able to communicate, why do I need to come back into the office? And really citing good data. I think good trust is driven by good data that has integrity and is reliable, but, you know, having very specific things, not just because they want you back in because they're paying a lot for real estate. This is going to help drive the business. More importantly to the individual, this is going to help you understand the business better, understand how you fit into the business. And what we're trying to do really is create stickiness so that, you know, we have you. We've spent a lot of money training and developing you. We want you to be a productive member of our team and we want to see you grow here, right? So I think there's a lot to that. But my last question to you, Lee, is how can boards and leadership teams work together to foster that culture of adaptability around this concept? Again, to build off my communication example, how can they use that to change their governance approach with stakeholders?
You're absolutely right, Amy. Communication is paramount here. In order to create the right communication, it has to be transparent. And transparency means it has to be based on good data. Because, you know, if the data is not good, if you're making up stuff and you're not accountable and transparent, whoever it is you're trying to build that trust with will see right through it at some point. We want to make you saying the right things, making the right decisions, and being transparent, accountable. In today's world, you only have to go as far as going and look at Fishbowl and see all the stuff that people are saying around what I just said. But in an organization today, we need to promote psychological safety. It's not a buzzword. What we want to really do is we want people, no matter what their level, whether that's the CEO or the guy in the mailroom or the receptionist, they need to feel comfortable that they can share their ideas, that they can ask questions, and they have the ability to learn from their mistakes. If I make one error, I'm not going to get canned. Okay. But the other thing is that somebody's going to listen to my ideas. Now, my ideas may not always be good, and I have to be an adult and understand every idea I have, the CEO is going to implement. But I hear you. Let me think about it. You know, and if you say you're going to get back to him, you got to get back to him. But you want to promote this idea of psychological safety. And there's a lot of great ideas that came out of the mailroom, by the way. But I don't know that we really have mailrooms anymore because we have a lot of email, but there's some good ideas in there too.
We still get packages.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I just bought one in a couple minutes ago. But we also want to celebrate learning, okay? We want to recognize and reward efforts to innovate and adapt. And even when those outcomes are not exactly what we wanted or they're uncertain, we want to turn around and celebrate the fact that we learned from a mistake. Okay, generally what we do is when somebody makes a mistake, everybody in the world knows about it and we call them out, they feel embarrassed. We don't want to do that. We want to talk about what we learned from that mistake. And that changes the world that we work in. Obviously, we're going to communicate in a way that promotes transparency. We want to clearly explain governance changes and how they're going to be implemented, as well as what are the benefits to the stakeholders. And that stakeholder could be an employee, it could be a vendor. But, you know, a lot of times we communicate via email, and it's like, tomorrow we're changing this to this. No explanation, no nothing. And if you don't like it, you can go somewhere else. That wasn't written in the email, but that was kind of the way it was delivered. We want to be transparent in our communications. In some cases, we may be putting a hardship on a vendor or an employee or some one of our stakeholders. And we need to understand that. And that's all back to inviting feedback. Okay. We want to regularly solicit that input from all of our stakeholders so that we can use their insight, not only in our governance practices, but also to help drive our business purpose, our mission, our objectives. So the key is, and everything, and it kind of goes back to something you said early on, Amy, effective communication. Boards have multiple channels of getting communication. Some boards use some communications better than others, but don't leave out any of them. Make sure they're all coming in, they're all being absorbed. Even the squeaky wheel that nobody really wants to hear from, you know, that community leader that's kind of complaining about everything that we do as a business, may at one point actually hit on something that's really important and actually may actually either save us a lot of money or allow us to make a lot of money. So we want to stay informed. We want our stakeholders to stay informed and engaged, but we want to demonstrate a commitment to adaptability and transparency, because it's all about building trust among the board members, among our stakeholders, and we need the board support in order to actually make governance changes. It can't be just some organizations, their strategic plans are these beautiful documents, they're 400 or 500 pages long, they hire a consultant to do it, and they're great. Where do they go? The bookshelf.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lee. I really appreciate it. And I think I took away a few things from this, so I'll just rattle them off quickly and you can tell me if I missed the boat completely. But it seems to me like boards need to really shift from intuition to intelligence and getting real-time data to look at and challenge assumptions, spot trends, drive strategies and pivots before the market does. So kind of looking at, are you getting good information? How are you communicating with management teams? Are you understanding that? And are you able to kind of to turn and drive that? And then looking at new opportunities with existing models. I think sometimes we pour a lot into innovation, but it's not always about disruption. It could be reimagining things you're doing already. And those, your examples that you gave from, you know, the shop floor to others that can probably point those out if you give them the opportunity to approach. And then I think just thinking about the collaboration involved in terms of breaking silos. I mean, I've worked in many organizations where, you know, there was this group and that group and the two shall never converse appropriately, right? So I think we're well beyond that. And companies and boards that can facilitate that, I think will really help and be a catalyst for solutions. And then the last thing I'm taking away is the feedback loop for continuous improvement. Because as we know, governance isn't static. We need a lot of information to learn and adapt, and iteration, learning by doing and enhancing that as you go is, I think, another theme that you brought out. So really appreciate your discussion on this. I see a lot of opportunity for adaptability built into governance structures for the future, and doing folks like the NACD and others are doing a lot of good work on kind of what the future of the boardroom may look like. So look to the Center for Corporate Governance from BDO and NACD and other organizations that are looking at governance structures and how to help enhance. Thank you, Lee. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ian.
All right. And stay tuned for more BDO in the Boardroom. Thank you for your participation today.
Thank you for listening to BDO in the Boardroom. If you like the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions about what we discussed today, reach out to us via BDO.com. where you can also access the resources cited in this episode and learn more about the BDO Center for Corporate Governance. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO.